Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 71. Thanks for joining us in our studio C here at MotorWeek Central and surrounding our unusually shaped table that we always gather around for these podcasts. Are our writer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Also unusually shaped.
As we probably all are. And Brian will have something special for us a little later along in this podcast. Our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chupnik.
Hello.
And our associate producer and the guy who basically is in charge of all of our road tests, Ben Davis.
Hello.
And we're going to actually start with a little something different. We will have our MotorWeek mailbag and our lightning round as we get along. But those of you listening to this podcast will probably detect that we're going to have a little bit of a green tone to at least the first part of this show. We have recently been testing a large variety of new electric cars. When I say large variety, three of them.
All three
new ones within the case of just a few weeks. The Ford Focus Electric, the Mitsubishi I, and we took delivery of a long-term Nissan Leaf that we're living with for about 6 months. So I thought now that all of us around the table have had at least some experience day in and day out with these cars, especially the Leaf, let's talk about them. Any pros and cons, any major differences between the three? Let me set the stage and say all of them give you overnight charging if you have 220 to 240 volts in your home and you have the proper charger, or can take up to 20 hours or so if you have to charge it with 110, which is what we're doing here at work with the Leaf. You have an indicated range somewhere around 80 to 85 miles. Most of us are a little uncomfortable going much more than, I think, 40 or so at a clip. But having said that, and really kind of negating the fact that these are very expensive vehicles, what do they like to live with? What has struck you about living either with the Focus Electric, the newest one, the Mitsubishi I, or the Leaf?
They all have their pluses and minuses. The Ford Focus is the most expensive at $40,000, but it's also the most that's like a real car. I mean, you really can't tell the difference between driving it and a regular Focus.
Is that the only one that's available as a gas model too, out of all three?
Well, the Mitsubishi I technically they have a gas model in Japan.
I see,
but. Yeah. And then the Mitsubishi I, speaking of that, that's the cheapest one, you know, closer to $30,000.
And all these prices are before if any kind of government tax incentives, right, if you're eligible for those.
But it gets the lowest range. And the Leaf's kind of right there in the middle, pricing-wise and range-wise. But it's probably my favorite. Just the interior is incredibly comfortable.
Which one?
Quiet, the Leaf, yeah. Mm-hmm. It obviously looks like an electric car, but inside it feels like a regular car. Plenty roomy. The batteries don't take up too much room. I like the fact that the charger is right in the front and the center instead of kind of where a gas cap would be. I like the nav on the Leaf. You know, it instantly keeps track of your range and it'll plot how far you can go one way or round trip. Brings up electric charging stations in your area.
Cool.
The electronics on the Leaf are just the interface of it is just.
You mean how it's designed to interact with the driver?
It's so user friendly, and like Brian was saying, it really does give you more information than any of the others. Even the I was just a little indicator on the gauge.
I don't think you could say it gives you more than the Ford. The Ford has that.
The brake coach and the driving coach.
Yeah, but that's a lot more for just driving as far as what the Leaf has.
I think you're right. I think I like driving the Leaf too. I also like the way that the Focus handled. I thought it was actually a little bit more enjoyable to drive. But,
definitely.
You know, we're probably not talking for the average consumer that big a difference. I like the fact that the Focus had a very straightforward, get familiar, just like any other Focus layout on the side of it. But most of us around this table have been driving the Leaf as a commuter car, so we've gotten a little more experience. Do you find as a group that you're always worried about how far you can go?
Absolutely. And you know why? Because, I mean, I don't know about the younger generation, but for I'm sure all of us at this table – vehicles have always been a sense of freedom. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, I don't feel free at all in an electric car. Well, I feel chained down to the man.
You have to really think about where you're going to go that next 24 hours or whatever.
Yeah. And once you get there, you got to spend 24 hours to get back.
It requires a little bit of planning. But like anything else, the first couple times you drive it, you're super nervous. But, you know, if you stick to your routine like most people do, to and from to work, maybe one or two errands on the way home, you really, you know, you figure out what you can do and what you can't do after a couple of months. And from then on, it's just becomes part of your regular commuting daily routine.
I don't think if you have the means to, if you have the means to have a car to do just that in,
you always.
But as your only car,
well, most of you know, if you're married, you know, you use your car every day and you use the wife's car over the weekends for longer trips.
I can see where it could work out for certain people.
Now, who doesn't have the availability to plug it in when you get
home? I don't.
Home?
I live in it.
You don't either.
I do. I mean, I can put it in. We have a garage, so we can plug it in. I mean, it's 110, but still.
Still.
I mean, but I'm 5 minutes away from where five miles away. And so really, you know, if an electric car, I could almost
You're
go
perfect
a week.
For an electric car.
I could go a week without charging it if I'm just going to and from work. But I would always want an alternative, a backup, something, just in case something happened.
I live in a townhouse, and even if I did have electric outside of my house, which I don't, I would have to drape the cord across a main thoroughfare sidewalk, right. And I would imagine that's a legal issue.
It doesn't look like charging stations are coming along quite as fast.
It's kind of surprising.
I'm surprised, too. I mean, because there are – I don't know what the total number is, but there's starting to be a substantial enough number of these cars out there here, especially in California and on the West Coast, that you see them quite regularly now.
Yeah, I would have thought we'd have more charging stations around than what we do at this point.
I do believe there's a place for these cars. My spouse drives probably at most 20 miles a day, and it would be a perfect vehicle for her. Of course, there is the price issue, and we all hope that will eventually cure itself. But I think I'm impressed at how unglitchy these cars are. I mean, they're well-engineered. They're smooth. They seem extremely competent. Any comments on that?
I can agree with that. I mean, it's just like hybrids. Everyone was nervous about hybrids when they came out. But, you know, Toyota in the history of the Prius has, you know, replaced very few battery packs or any electric things. I mean, no one worries about whether their cell phone battery is going to hold up or not. I mean,
there is one.
We've gotten to the point where batteries are pretty fair in line.
I think you're right about that. There is one thing I've noticed we all talk about. I mean, you see it in the advertisements for these cars. Never stop at a gas station again. Of course, that has its pluses and minuses. You never check anything else either. But although you never stop at a gas station, every time I stop with the vehicle, I'm looking for a plug.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you either have it plugged in your garage or in the side of the building or whatever. So I don't know whether that balance is off or not, because you don't just want to walk away and let it sit there, either for the next person or for yourself. You want every little bit of juice you can find.
No oil changes or maintenance, those type of things. That's a plus.
It is.
You think about it, that saves you some money.
I was going to say that factors into the cost of a car.
You know,
you're just paying, it's $2 or $3 a night. If give or take.
If you do a full charge. Yeah.
Right. And most people aren't probably doing a full charge. So it's, I mean, you're really saving a ton of money if you do it. If you have the means to have that alternative car.
Yeah. So which one would you buy, John, of these three?
That's a good question.
Which one would you buy?
Of these three, at the current time, probably, even though I like the Focus a lot because of the price differential, I think I'd go for the Leaf.
I can't disagree with that as much as I would like to.
Yeah,
I'm the Leaf.
I haven't been in the Leaf as much as you guys have, but I have spent time in the Focus, and I was impressed with the off-the-line acceleration and the torque behind it. And I would go with that one only because I haven't been in the Leaf as much. The IME would be out for me for sure, though.
Well, it's super cheap, the IME. You got to give it that.
That's where I was going.
It's very utilitarian as far as the inside feel, but and there's a ton of room back there.
Yeah, I'm a torque lover, though. I have to have it.
But the iMEV could actually be the vehicle that breaks through because it's going to, and depending on what state you're in, like in Maryland where you can get up to $10,000 off your taxes, that puts it under 20 grand.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, even though the Mitsubishi I is probably the least fun to drive, shall we say, of the three of them.
Absolutely.
It might actually be the best appliance.
And it does get the best MPG equivalency rating, I
yes,
believe.
Yes, if you could really bank that. But so three good choices. I think it sort of depends on how deep your pockets are. But I think that especially when you look at the eye and think, well, we must be making some progress because they are able to sell it for substantially less. Before we leave the electric transportation area, Brian, you recently had a chance to test something electrified that had less than four wheels.
Right. Zero Motorcycle Company, they've got six different electric motorcycles, anything from dirt bikes to dual sport for the street and just straight up sport bike. There's like three electric motorcycle companies. They've all had prototypes float around for years now. Zero's kind of the first one to actually get them out there and sell them and establish a dealer network, which they're working on this year. About 100-mile range, and, you know, it's not quite a full-size feel. It's still scaled down a little bit compared to, you know, traditional sport bikes and dual sports, but, you know, surprisingly fun to ride. And
if you had one of those, since you can remove the battery pack on it.
On some models.
On some models. Yeah. Would you go that route so you could take a second battery with you?
I'm
curious as a biker.
Yeah, because it is removable, it still weighs a lot. You wouldn't really want to carry it. That's the main thing we were talking earlier about people that live without a garage and they live in an apartment or whatever. You can plug it out, unplug it and take it into your apartment to charge it. That's me. But that model only has about a 40-mile range, mm-hmm. which would definitely not be for me. And the models with a 100-mile range, that battery's not removable. So,
did you have on that bike a readout of how many miles remaining? That's something we didn't cover on the electric cars. I found all three of the cars that had readouts telling you how many miles you had left. Pretty unreliable.
Well,
it depends on whether you got the radio on, the air conditioning, and all that stuff, even the windshield wipers and lights.
Yeah, some are incredibly optimistic when you get there. You know, they'll say like 116 miles, like the Leaf. That one, I think every time you full charge it, it says like 116. And then literally, by the time you get out of your driveway, it's showing like 98, and then it goes down quick.
Wow.
Until you get down to like 80, 70.
And then it sort of levels
off. It kind of stabilizes, it realizes how you're going to drive. And then it's a little more realistic.
I had a quick question on the Zero bike. Does that bike generate any heat or have any vibration at all at speed, like a regular motorcycle or anything like that? Or is it?
The batteries heat up a little bit, but nowhere near like a regular engine.
And there's no.
And it makes no noise or anything.
How did you ride a lot?
That's weird.
How did it strike you?
I mean, there's no clutch, obviously, or changing gears, but. You know, all these electric cars, it's the same way. It's just instant torque. I mean, you hit the throttle and the thing takes off and it's lightweight, nimble. It's kind of fun. It's just with only 100-mile range, you know, it's not really going to appeal to too many bikers at this point. It's mainly appealing to, you know, eco-conscious people or people that want the latest and greatest thing.
I think you could say that about the electric cars.
Yeah, I do too. First adopters now who are driving, what market there is for these.
I was just saying, do you think bikers will ever get into that kind of thing?
Well, sure.
Or is it just a commuter vehicle?
There might be a late adopters.
I think double that range. I mean, how many bikers ride around on a chopped out Triumph with only a 40-mile gas tank range?
Oh, I'm not saying the range is an issue, but how many bikers are going to throw away their combustion motor for an electric motor?
Well, it's all about performance. I mean, you know, there's people out there that, you know, wouldn't drive a Harley. They want a sport bike. If you come out with an electric bike that's twice as fast.
But it's not going to sound sound mean, look mean. I think that goes hand in hand with bikes, bike crowds and.
There's different bikers out there.
That's kind of my problem with the Tesla Roadster. I mean, it's a heck of a performer, and it's fast as all get out, but it doesn't make any noise. For a sports, you expect a sports car to make some noise.
Yeah, that's half the experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I imagine safety in motorcycles making noise is another issue. I mean,
have to add some kind of a chirping sound or something like the electric cars.
Yeah, loud bikes do save lives.
Yeah. Absolutely. That bike would have to chirp like a legion of crickets for me to get on it on the highway for sure.
Okay, let's move on now to our lightning round, where our Motor Week panelists have the opportunity to share their opinions on topics making the headlines. We've got 2 minutes to do our little debate, and then we will hear the bell from Michelle Parker, our producer. Here we go. General Motors has announced that they've dropped all Facebook advertising and will not be advertising during the next Super Bowl. Is that a smart move?
Wow.
All three of you folks are considerably younger than I am.
My pay grade.
I don't know. I mean, as far as Facebook, as a personal user, I don't look at the ads anyway. I mean, if I do, I look at it. I would never click on it anyway, because really this way of, you know, with internet hacking and viruses and all that other stuff, if I don't know what I'm clicking on, I just won't click on it. Even if it looks like a real ad, I really don't. I really don't care who's advertising.
Do you even notice the ads?
I've never noticed one. No.
I mean, they're on the sides. I mean, you see them, but really,
well, they're on the sides of lots of pages.
Right, but not on the mobile anymore, though.
That's all I ever use is a mobile. And I'm sure a lot of people, that's only the only way they ever navigate Facebook.
So, I mean, if you're looking at it on your iPhone or Droid or any kind of device, mobile device, there's no ads anyway. It's really just on
I'm sure it doesn't pop up on an iPad either, right?
That I'm not sure. I don't know. The iPad screen is a little wider that can show the ads.
Desktops are on their way out anyway.
Right.
Yeah. They didn't say anything about not having a presence on Facebook, but then again, lots of companies do. Do you personally feel like that's effective?
I would have to know how much it would cost to advertise on Facebook to justify it.
Yeah.
Because everybody who uses Pandora, you can't get away from their pop-up ads. Yeah, maybe that would be more beneficial, something like that.
Yeah. How about this, moving on to the Super Bowl? I mean, GM getting ready to launch their all-new full-size pickup trucks, which would seem to be a natural venue to put it on the Super Bowl. But at $3 million a pop, they decided it wasn't worth it.
It's so much money, but you do get so much play out of it. I mean, they start talking about it 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. And after the day after, that's all they talk about. I mean,
and even you know, maybe they got
it, but it's probably worth all whatever it costs.
They must have gotten felt burned this year. I think they had probably a Super Bowl ad that was panned because it was sort of mean.
Is that the post-apocalyptic one?
Yeah, and it wasn't. It didn't resonate very well with people. But you know, good ads they care. I've always been a critic of it, but then I see companies that no one's ever heard of before, you know, bubble right to the top after they bought one or two 30-second ads. Mm-hmm. I don't know any other medium, single presentation where you can get that kind of bang for the buck.
I think you can get that. I mean, people do talk about it, but there's always places before the Super Bowl, even after the Super, you know, I mean, there's always places, not maybe just not during, maybe not paying for.
Well, Volkswagen did that last year. They bought the local ads in major markets surrounding the Super Bowl.
I think that, I mean, if they're going to completely do it, whatever. I mean, TV, people are going to, if people are going to watch TV, and I mean, TV's commercials with shows thrown in the middle. So, you know, I mean, if they're going to show a commercial, people are going to buy the truck, whatever.
So, you know, they certainly could. You're absolutely right. They certainly could buy around it. Mm-hmm. Good. Good discussion, everybody. Let's now reach into our Motor Week mailbag, and this question comes from Timothy. I've been noticing a lot more cars with auto stop start on the streets, and I'm curious about the wear this feature may cause. I am curious if this shortens the life of the starter or any other components of the engine.
Yeah, I sure wonder that myself.
Well,
they do have like the high torque starters. I mean, with the hybrids especially.
Yeah, it's not your traditional starter motor. It's a much more heavier duty, and usually the battery is too. I'm not sure if they've been out there long enough to be able to answer that question.
It's a good one, Timothy.
Yeah, I mean, you hear all the manufacturers say everything's beefed up to handle it, but there's something about me not being comfortable with my engine starting and stopping so frequently.
It does come into a matter of frequency, and you're right, because you figure, what do you do? Normally, you go to work, you start your car once, and now if you're in rush hour traffic, it could start and stop a dozen times or whatever.
Yeah. You can turn it off most of the time.
And if anything goes wrong with your electrical system, it will deactivate itself, so your car won't shut off. Mm-hmm. So it does have some fail-safes. Unfortunately, whether we think it's an advance or not, it's one of the tools automakers are going to be employing to get a little bit more fuel economy out of your cars to meet the new CAFE standards. So even though it might not initially be the smartest technology, it will save fuel, and we're going to have it. But let's hope that they've got the components beefed up enough so there's no problems down the road. Because I'm sure those components cost a lot more to replace than a traditional starter motor.
I would think.
Yeah.
So, Timothy, not sure that answered your question. It probably does do some more wear and tear, but on the other hand, it's going to be the price of admission for a lot of the fuel-efficient cars coming down the road. And that sort of brings to an end on a down note. Let's pick it back up here. Thank you very much for joining us for our Motor Week Podcast 71. We always have a great time sitting around here talking and producing these for you. And speaking of producer, I'd like to thank our producer, Michelle Parker. She's the lady with the bell. And our audio engineer, Jim Bigwood, who always makes sure we come through loud and clear. And, of course, our podcast creator, Bob Mixter. Till next time, I'm John Davis. Thanks for watching Motor Week on public television and Velocity. And thanks for listening to our podcast. And we hope you'll join us again very soon.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by rockauto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.